The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Along with my friend John Couch, engineering and producing the Buckmaster Show on the other side of the glass. Together, we welcome you to our program in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. It's Friday, October the 25th, 2019. Woken this morning by the wind and a power outage at 5:30. That wind was really blowing up in the central foothills. And for those of us who have been around a while, and that includes Dan Scheer, who's with me in studio, and Sheriff Mark Napier, I think they'll echo what I'm saying. It almost seems like we have these kind of transitional winds that signal summer's over, late, early fall's over. We're in a transition season.
I think so. And then, of course, up where you're at, it blows in Mona's Bakery smells.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm not getting compensated for that commercial endorsement.
You're actually right. We're only about a mile, and when the east wind's blowing, I can smell those Danish Kringles. We are live weekdays during the noon hour on 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk. Our media partners, a big shout-out to all of them, TucsonSentinel.com, our friend Dylan over there, Dylan Smith, our friend Dan Scheer at Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun. Thank you, Dan, for your support.
Yep, always.
The Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio publications, including Inside Tucson Business and the Tucson Weekly. This is Jim Nintzel. This was his big week. Not only is it Nintzel's birthday, but it's also the launch of their big event of the year. And you know what that is, Dan. That is the Tucson Weekly, Best of
the
Weekly.
The Best of, yes.
So, you know, they put out their biggest issue of the year, and so Jim
very popular.
Was really working hard. They have other publications, too, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Friday Focus interview today is with Pima County Sheriff Mark Napier. Joining me, Dan Scheer, editor, as we say, of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Dan also serves as editorial director for a couple of dozen WIC newspapers in the western United States, and I can attest to the fact that he's out on the road visiting many of them. He was in Pierre, the capital of South Dakota, visiting in the capital. Is it the state? What do they call it?
The
Capitol.
State Capitol building is there, and so the legislature meets there in a town of 15,000 in the middle of nowhere.
And the Capitol Time, what do they call it?
A Cap Journal.
The Cap Journal. Yep. You were up there talking with those people. That's part of your other job, going around to the different WIC newspapers. Okay, Sheriff, thank you for being with us.
I'm happy to be here. We booked this, what, 3 or 4 months ago?
We did. Yes, we booked. I do have a tendency to do that, but sometimes it pays off serendipitously as some news of the day. The Pima County Deputy Sheriff's Association, the Pima County Corrections Officers Association issued a vote of no confidence in your leadership, contending you abolished a plan to fully fund a step plan for salaries, and they said that you pledged in the past to graciously step down if employees of the Pima County Sheriff's Department don't want you for a second term. Are you going to say today that you're not running for a second term?
No, I absolutely will not say that. I think that what we're dealing with here is a small percentage of the overall employees. Remember, we have nearly 1,500 employees at the Pima County Sheriff's Department, and the Deputy Sheriff's Association represents a percentage of only the deputies, so not even the entirety of the department. We have civilian staff, correction staff, commanders, other support staff. So my sense is that the department is not in a rebellion or mass lack of support of me. I think we need to clarify the record. The STEP plan was abolished by the Board of Supervisors before I took office, and I don't have the authority to establish a compensation plan for the county. I don't have that's not under the authority of the sheriff. I can champion the cause of compensation, which I have very effectively over the last 3 years, but the sheriff cannot set compensation. And we did, in fact, come up with a replacement for the STEP plan, which we were going to champion, and I had tentative support from Mr. Huckleberry on, which was called the merit-based compensation, which was essentially a classification system that replaced the STEP plan but operated very similarly, but on a merit base, as opposed to a basis that you existed for 12 additional months and therefore you're entitled to a raise, much like it is in the private sector. I know my children, two of my children work at Raytheon, and their compensation most definitely is tied to merit, as it is in most businesses. So I wanted to bring more of a business model to the department and something that would replace and provide more predictable path for compensation, and the deputies rejected that. So we made a good faith effort to do that, and then we went off and tried to do other things with compensation.
Are they making money? More money under your leadership?
They're making significantly more money. A deputy that, when I took office, it was making $20.85 an hour, today makes $26.01 an hour. That's 24.7% increase in compensation over the last not even 3 years. Now, I realize that entry-level compensation, when you increase that, you do cause compression within that compensation classification range. I get that. There's no way to avoid that. We had to make ourselves more competitive at the bottom level of compensation in order to do recruitment, because they told me at the same time staffing was struggling, and they were correct about that. But we were not marketplace competitive at $20.85 an hour. Today, the deputy coming in the door would make $25.50 an hour. So we are marketplace competitive. In fact, among the highest paid sheriff's departments in the state. So we become more competitive, and we're recruiting much better than we have been. But it has caused some compression within that pay range. And we can address these things if we work cooperatively together instead of the path that they've chosen.
Dan, before I throw it to you, just one more follow-up. Is this a politically motivated effort to set the table for next year's election, you as a Republican, and is there a Democrat that some of these people who did the no confidence vote would like to run and see go against you and win? Is this politically motivated then, Sheriff?
Well, I think that there's a political aspect to this. And, you know, the media outlets said this is an historic vote. Well, only if we would agree that history repeats itself. There was a no-confidence vote against Sheriff Nanos, who was a Democrat, and before him, Sheriff Dupnik, who was a Democrat, by this same association. So history does repeat itself. This was quite predictable, actually. I expected this when I took office. So it's not surprising. I just wish, rather than doing I hate to use the word stunt, but I can't think of a better word. Rather than do that, I wish they would come to me with a list of things and say, Sheriff, these are the things that we really want to work on with you. Okay, let's find a way to work on those things. And you're not going to get everything that you want. It doesn't work that way for fiscal reasons and other reasons. We cannot do everything that they want, but we could make strides working together in a productive, professional, and collaborative manner, I think, much more than we'll go down this path.
Okay, Dan Scheer.
So these two groups did, 3 years ago, have a no-confidence vote against Sheriff Nanos. Then they turned around and endorsed you. There may be some games going on here, but the fact is it sounds alarming to the public when a couple of unions say, we don't have confidence in our leader. How do you address something like that?
Well, I think by objective facts and documentation. The fact is the crime's down in Pima County. The fact is we have significantly raised compensation for both corrections officers and our deputies. These are objective facts. We are more engaged in the community than we ever have been. I think public sentiment is that the Sheriff's Department is doing very good work. We're more fiscally sound than we ever have been. In the last two fiscal years, we've returned to the county taxpayers almost $11 million. Now, we've done that while increasing compensation, addressing staffing issues, and reducing crime. I think these are things for our Sheriff's Department to be proud of.
Anything more on this, Dan? Go ahead.
Things were a complete mess when you came in. The budget, the morale, the leadership, everything was a complete mess, and I have to acknowledge that things were a whole lot better today. But it sounds like somebody wants it to be a complete mess again as we near an election. What's it going to take to turn something like this around?
Well, Dan, we're both business people, and I've been engaged in this for a long time. It's a cultural change. And affecting cultural change within an organization is exceptionally challenging. And I fully believe that if it's not Sheriff Napier, it'll be Sheriff Jones, and we'll be talking about a no-confidence vote against Sheriff Jones. And then after Jones, it'll be Smith, and we'd be doing the same thing again. What we got to do is have a cultural change that says this is not the way to address these things, that we're better served by working together in a productive and collaborative way to address these issues, realizing that not every issue is going to be resolved for fiscal reasons, administrative reasons, or other reasons. We're not going to resolve everything, but we make greater strides when we work productively together. And you're right, it was kind of a mess I inherited. And as a change agent, you expect people to shoot arrows at you. That's just part of being a change agent. And we are operating more like a business. We're more engaged in the community than we ever have been. Our promotional processes are different, more challenging, and more unbiased. We've re-engineered our internal affairs process to make it more effective as a self-regulating agency, as we should. And some of these things are disquieting to people. They would like to go back to the way it was. Well, I don't think we want to go back, and I don't think the people of this county want us to go back.
Are we safer under your leadership? Are crime statistics showing that?
Well, I know that we're safer. Now, would I credit me? I don't think so. I don't think that's fair. I credit the men and women out there doing the good work, and I support them. I support them in their attack, a proactive attack of crime. And we're trying to get our staffing levels back up, which has been a challenge for every law enforcement agency across the nation. But crime is down significantly in Pima County over the last 3 years. I have some statistics, which we'll be releasing next week as part of a formal press release. But if we compare the first three quarters of 2017 to the first three quarters of 18 and 19, sexual assaults in Pima County are down by 32.2%. Robberies are down by 6.1%. Burglaries down by 25.7%. Other assaults are down by 20%. Aggravated assaults are down by 13%. I know homicides are also down in that same period. So we are making great strides in keeping Pima County safer. And I attribute the hard work of our deputies out on the road, our investigative staff. And I think part of that cultural change is I've committed to us proactively addressing crime and going out there and attacking and pursuing criminals.
But you would like four more years. You have decided you are going to run, and you've talked it over with your family.
Yeah, the family's honestly not very much.
They're not on board.
No, they're not on board. They'd like Dad to be home and Grandpa to be home. But, Bill, I love public service, and I honestly love the Pima County Sheriff's Department. I love this county. It's my home. And I think we've got more work to do, and I want to be a part of that. And it's really up to the people of Pima County. That's who it's up to. There are 450,000 registered voters in Pima County, and I hope that they see that we've done a good job and that I've earned the right to be their sheriff for another 4 years. I'm not going to be a 20-year sheriff. I said that very clearly, that I don't intend to do that. I started as a police officer in 1981, so I've been doing this a while, and eventually, in the best interest of the agency and myself personally, I'll hang up my badge and gun and retire. But we're not there yet.
And you've polled your family, and the vote is in. It's thumbs down on another term if they were to make the decision.
Yeah, I think that the family would. Marlene, my wife, is different because she encouraged me to run because she cares deeply for young law enforcement officers, because our son is one. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what encouraged me to run, is my wife's encouragement to try to provide, and ironically, good leadership and affection for some of those same people who think they hate me now.
All right, we're going to take our break right here. We'll have more with the sheriff. 790-2040 if you'd like to join in the conversation. It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. We'll be right back with Sheriff Napier.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To sign up for RTA updates, visit rtamobility.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, the Friday Focus interview today. Sheriff Mark Napier is here. Sheriff of Pima County, Dan Scheer, is here from the Green Valley News and Sal Rita Sun. And we want to pick up now, Dan, a little bit, get an update from the sheriff about this board that's being formed.
Right. Well, we used to have a CLEPSI, Community Law Enforcement Partnership Commission. That's gone. Let's not get into it. You've introduced a new idea of a community advisory board for the Sheriff's Department. Explain how that would work and how it's different from CLEPSI, and what's the status?
Well, thanks, Dan. What I didn't want to have happen is CLEPSI to go away and then there not to be input. Community input to the sheriff, because I think all law enforcement executives benefit from that, of hearing community concerns. So we decided to form the Sheriff's Advisory Council. I was really concerned, to be honest with you, when we launched that we wouldn't have anybody interested in participating. But to date, we have over 60 applications of interest for a 10-person panel, which I think is really remarkable. So we'll close that on November 1st. And how this will be different is this group will be selected by the Sheriff's Department and interact directly with the sheriff and provide advice and information on policies and procedures, and hopefully in a much more productive way than we did with CLEPSI, because that became just a political platform of stuff that was very unproductive. In fact, they disinvited me to their meetings, which is kind of shocking if you want to have interaction with the Sheriff's Department.
The sheriff was disinvited to the... to a law enforcement group meeting?
Yeah, which speaks of the potential that they really weren't serious about this. And I think we've got some really good people that have applied and shown interest in being a part of this. And let me be perfectly clear. I think we benefit tremendously from community input and their viewpoints on our policies, procedures, and practices. When CLEPSI originally started and it was more functional, we got some good work done on. We changed some policies at the Sheriff's Department. We were aware of some practices that we could revise. So there are very good positive things there. And I'm hoping that the Sheriff's Advisory Council picks up in a positive way. We'll make the selections and we'll launch it just after the first of the year.
Is this a non-paying position?
Yeah, it's just a community board. Yeah, okay. Yes.
Go ahead, Dan.
So, number one, this is going to be outside the purview of the supervisors.
Yes, it'll be interacting directly with the sheriff.
And then one thing you said makes me nervous, and that is that the sheriff's department's going to choose the people on the board, and you want to have that back and forth. You want to be challenged on your policies and procedures. CLEPSI went about it all wrong. It spun out of control, and it became just this empty meeting group that just didn't need to exist anymore. I am concerned, though, that this is going to be a bunch of yes men and yes women on this board.
Valid concern, Dan. I share your concern, and I'd ask that the Board of Supervisors members appoint or recommend two people for me for each district. They declined to do so. They thought it was better that we pick. So I will not be picking people that I think just would agree with us. What I think divergence of view, informed dissent is incredibly valuable. So no, I'm not interested in just a Napier fan club. I would rather hear people, but you've got to express it in a productive and constructive way for us to move forward on difficult issues.
Well, when do the meetings begin, and will the press be allowed in all of them?
We're still setting the meeting schedule. It'll be after the first of the year. We got to make the selections first, and then we'll look at I think we need to form the group and see what their level of comfort is in having the media in, and if they feel that would stymie effective communication between us. So we'll see once we establish the group, Dan.
Okay.
Would they be under this open meeting law or no?
Well, I think Chuck Huckleberry has asked that it not be. I don't think that he wanted that.
Well, I think there's some debate. I'll seek legal counsel. I have my attorneys to advise me on whether or not we should be subject to open meeting law or whether that would be an encumbrance. And I'll defer to legal advice on that.
And really, though, the question comes down to transparency law or not, that people are going to want to know what's going on in there. And we know that they can't tell you what to do. They just advise you. And I agree that there sometimes is more candor when the press isn't there. But I also think that it's important that we are there.
I want to get back to the good news that crime statistics are very encouraging. What about increasing traffic patrols? We've just had this epidemic here within the city with these pedestrian deaths and injuries. Is the Sheriff's Department working with the city to try to reduce that?
Well, actually, Bill, what we did is we launched a new focus on red light running. It's really incredibly hard to enforce, and it sounds like it'd be easy because as we're driving our cars around every day, you say, oh, look at that, so-and-so ran the red light.
Yeah, yeah.
The problem is when they see a Sheriff's Department car, they don't run the red light because they see it. So sometimes it's really hard for us to enforce, but I've been asking our troops to pay more attention to traffic enforcement for several reasons. One, as obvious, is roadway safety. That's obvious. But the other thing we miss is that when criminals traverse our county and they see, oh, look, there's a Sheriff's Department car, got somebody pulled over there. There's a Sheriff's Department, they got somebody pulled over there. This isn't a place to do crime. It seems like there's a good law enforcement presence. So there's a collateral benefit to that. I'm not interested in the number of tickets we write. That doesn't interest me. What interests me is changing driving behavior and increasing our presence in the community. Those are the two things that are my main focal point. And I see that our deputies are doing more traffic enforcement out there. Again, I'm not interested in the number of tickets written, but the number of traffic stops. How many times did we show that presence in the community and engage either in enforcement or educational activity with respect to driving?
What kind of motorcycle patrol do we have in the Sheriff's Department? Is it a small portion of the Sheriff's Department?
Yeah, I just saw my motor officers at a community event just a little while ago. It is a small contingent, and surprisingly, or maybe not, we're really having trouble finding people that want to do motorcycle patrol.
That was my follow-up. What kind of person goes into that? So many risks involved with the motorcycles. Is there a shortage of motorcycle officers?
Yes, we're actually having trouble filling the position of the motor sergeant for our motor unit because, honestly, it's nicer to drive around it in air conditioning Tahoe than on a motorcycle in July.
Tucson in the summer on the motorcycle.
and there's, of course, danger involved in driving a motorcycle around. But I know the guys in our motor unit, and they're fantastic guys. They do a great work out there. But it's hard to get people that are interested because, you know, I grew up riding motorcycles on the farm back in Iowa. And so I've been around motorcycles my whole life. I raced motocross with my boys when they were teenagers, so I'm very comfortable on a motorcycle. But a lot of young people, a lot of millennials coming in have never been on a motorcycle, and they have trouble passing the test. And they say, okay, I could be in a Tahoe with a radio and an air conditioner and a roof over my head and a seatbelt on, or I could be out on that motorcycle. Yeah. And it's hard to sometimes fill those positions.
Well, this speaks to the bigger question of recruiting people to law enforcement, and it's getting tougher. Have you lowered or raised your standards when it comes to recruiting?
They're the same, Dan. And some of those are driven by Arizona Post. We have no latitude on those. But what we're doing is more effective outreach, and the raising our entry-level pay has helped substantially. But we're also looking for unconventional avenues. In fact, I'm meeting with Sunnyside School District on their JTED program to start looking at ways to career path people, because I have a great affection for the south side of Tucson and the Sunnyside School District. Can we path kids through the JTED program as part of Sunnyside into our corrections facility when they're 18 and then path them at 21 to be road deputies? So we've got to start looking down into the high schools and getting millennials more interested in this profession. I read a really interesting study. I'm kind of an academic nut job at heart, but they talked about the lower birth rate in the United States and how millennials, I know because I thought I'd have 10 grandchildren right now, but I only have 1.5. That millennials are having less children, and that 20 years from now, that will make it even more difficult for law enforcement to recruit, because not only will we have the same recruitment challenges that we have today, but that pool of 18 to 25-year-olds will be significantly less because our birth rate's lower. So that'll be a challenge. I hope to be above the grass 25 years from now, but this job may not be conducive to that.
No. Let's hope you're still around. Jeff has called us. Jeff's on the line at 790-2040. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yes. Hello, Sheriff. I had a comment and a question. A comment. Maybe it would help the cost for getting more motorcycle cops if you wouldn't make them wear those black nylon or forget the word, anything but cotton uniforms in the blazing heat in the summertime. I know I just can't believe those guys, how they do that. I'm a motorcycle rider myself. Question is, on the red lights, which seem to be the problem around Tucson, this red light running, why can you not treat it somewhat like a DUI problem where you create a DUI red light detail, say two or four or six motorcycle cops, rotate them at the problem intersections on a varying schedule so you can't tick anybody off. And I'm sure there must be some areas that are way more problem than other areas. And that's my question. I'm just going to hang up and listen. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff.
Well, thank you, Jeff. Let me answer your second question first. We're doing exactly what you recommended. We're looking at the most problematic intersections and asking our deputies to pay more attention to those intersections. So we're doing that to the best we can with the current staffing. With respect to your first question, you'll know as a motorcycle rider, as I do, that clothing, while maybe not temperature cool, does provide protective value if you go down. So some of that clothing that they wear does have protective value if they lay the bike down and skid on the roadway. While it may not be very comfortable or temperature, it's like wearing a leather jacket when you're riding a motorcycle in the summer. You do it because it provides protection.
As far as radar, is that being used in your traffic enforcement these days?
Yeah, they do run radar. The deputies are busy. Okay. Make no mistake about that. But I do strongly encourage them to run traffic enforcement when they have the opportunity to do so, because aggressive driving and red light running is a real problem in our county and cause a lot of accidents. Some of the most serious accidents are the result of red light running and where a lot of injuries occur. So we're trying to pay more focus to those things.
Dan?
What role does digital and technical expertise play in going after criminals, and how are you using it, and how are you recruiting people who want to be, in essence, IT deputies?
Oh, God, that's we could do a whole show on that. You know, let's just talk for one thing about cryptocurrencies. The drug dealers, we used to, you'd take off a drug dealer, you'd have 10 pounds of marijuana, and you'd have a duffel bag with $20,000 in it. So we would seize that as part of a RICO seizure. Well, now they're using cryptocurrencies and all kinds of things that it's really challenging for law enforcement to break into that. We know millions of dollars is going back and forth between the United States and Mexico, and we're really having a hard time interdicting that. So you're right. We do need to not try to make a cop an IT person, but try to make an IT person a cop. And that is a real challenge, Dan, and it involves a lot of different things. Technology and law enforcement, I started in 81. High technology was fingerprints in 1981. We had that little dusting kit, and we throw that black powder all over the place, and we get it all over ourselves, and we thought we were high tech. Well, now, you know, we're talking about things like touch DNA, rapid DNA processing, which is probably going to come in my career life, where everybody that's booked into the jail will have a DNA swab. It will be able to put it in a machine and within 2 hours have a DNA profile. So you might arrest somebody on a traffic warrant in Tucson, Arizona, do a DNA swab, and within 2 hours connect that person to a rape or a homicide in North Carolina 5 years ago. Mm. So the technology is really, really increasing. I as a sidebar, I sometimes I'll have a drink on the back patio with my son, and I say, you know, when I started, I had a wheel gun, 18 bullets, a nightstick, and a radio that worked sometimes, you know, back in the day. And I said, you know, Travis, in 25 or 30 years, you'll be the old head. And you'll be saying, yeah, I remember when all we had in the car was a computer, and I had a taser and OC spray and all the things the kids have now. And a cop will look at him and say, how could you do police work like that? So I don't know where technology is going, but it's going to really impact law enforcement over the next couple of decades.
How is your jail population? We haven't talked about that as part of your portfolio.
Well, let me first say, and I hope that they're listening, I love the people at our jail. They are some of the best people in the world. They do such an amazing job, and I'm so proud of our corrections people. Most sheriffs I know would burn their jail to the ground because they just don't want to have the hassle of it. I don't feel that way at all. Our jail population runs between 1,800 and 1,900 people a day. That's been pretty consistent. What's surprising to people, is especially when I travel across the country, is they say, well, Sheriff, isn't your jail full of a lot of undocumented immigrants? And the fact of the matter is that is absolutely not true. About 5% of the jail population at any given time are people in there without known documentation. As far as country of origin. And only 3% of those people are subject to ICE detainers at any given time. So it's a very low percentage, because you go back east and they assume that my jail must be overrun.
Yeah, like 90%.
Yeah, and it's just simply not true.
Hmm. And did I hear you say it's almost 2,000 a day?
The population of the jail runs between 1,800 and 1,900 a day.
And you can accommodate that many people?
We can accommodate about 2,200 before we get really strained. And the good news is that I think we'll be at or very, very near full staffing in a jail by the first of the year, shortly thereafter. And that is something that we haven't experienced in a long time.
Mm. It is hard to recruit not only deputies, but corrections officers.
Oh, they're incredibly hard to recruit, Bill, because they do very difficult work. They really do. And so many law enforcement agencies see them as an afterthought or a nuisance. I don't feel like that. I have a satellite office at the jail. I don't get to spend as much time there as I'd like to. But I have gone into pods and been with corrections officers. And it's funny, my staff asked me when I first became sheriff, I said, I want to go into the most dangerous pod and work with a corrections officer for a little while. And they said, well, Sheriff, what should we do if you get taken hostage? And I thought for a minute, I said, don't call my wife. That would be a bad negotiating strategy. But no, I have immense respect for them. You know what? And let me give them another shout out. You know, when we have a community event, whether it's Tip a Cop or any of these things, you know who the majority of the people are that show up? Mm. Are my correction staff.
Mm.
I see them everywhere I go. Anytime we have a community event that is, where they donate time, guess who's there? It's the people you would least expect. And I'm so proud of them. And I think they're really proud of being a part of the department. And I hope some of them are listening, because I can't tell you guys how much I care for you enough.
And is it considered a natural step to go from a corrections officer to a deputy? Because I know a lot of corrections officers who love what they're doing, want to stay doing that.
No, some of them get in there with the hopes of laddering over to be a deputy, and that is an effective career path, especially if you're 18 when you come in, Dan, because then you can use those 3 years to stay out of trouble and become a deputy at 21. But some people just like that environment. For whatever reason, they don't want to be out on the road. They like being correction staff, and we need those long-term employees in there for stability.
Are these repeat offenders, many of them in the jail population?
We have a high percentage of felons in there, and then we have a lot of what we call repeat customers that are in there. And we're working well with Pima County in ways to reduce jail population. What I want to make sure of, and any thinking law enforcement person does, are the right people in jail. And that's, we do criminalize poverty. And I know that makes me sound like I'm not a Republican. I am. I'm a very pragmatic guy. But if I got pulled over and there was a $500 bond for something, that would be a nuisance to me, but I would bond out. Another person, that may be, you know, a week in jail. And we're criminalizing poverty. So we do need bail reform as part of our national dialogue on criminal justice reform. That needs to be looked at so that we're not incarcerating people because they're poor. And so we need to look at that and then make sure with these low-level drug offenders, are we criminalizing this or treating it like a public health problem? Because the root of the problem, you're not going to arrest your way through this problem. A treatment and an intervention is always going to have to be a part of that. So we need to look at laws and look at how we treat, personal use drug offenders so that I can still uphold the law, which I have to do. I've taken an oath to do, but also engage in more effective public policy.
So getting back to what we led off with today about the Deputy Sheriff's Association and the Corrections Officers Association giving you this no confidence vote, you would say, though, the morale, as far as you're concerned, overall of your total number of employees, how many is it again?
We're just a little under 1,500.
And your feeling is the morale is very good. Very good or what?
Well, I would say it's as good as any law enforcement agency that I've been around. I talk to other sheriffs and chiefs of police, and they share some of the same heartache that I have, is you're always going to have a contingent of people that are unhappy with you for a variety of reasons. And I don't take that lightly. I'm not meaning to diminish the importance of that. But I'm not in the morale business, and I mean that in the kindest way possible. My job is to run the sheriff's department and keep the people of this county safe because that's what they elected me to do. And to the degree to which I can do that and make people happy, I do. But I can't fall into this morale trap where I'm continually chasing the dragon on morale. I think, now maybe I'm, and they're going to get mad at me when I say this, I was always happy because I had a job I loved. And I had a job I believed was important and meant something. I was so damn proud to be a police officer. And you know what? I got to do this incredibly great job, and they paid me every other week to do it. This is the greatest thing in the world. I was always happy with that because I felt like I was giving my life up with purpose. I was doing something that they make TV shows about, for goodness sakes. And I always was very proud of the fact I was a law enforcement officer and I thought it was, I still do. I think it's the greatest job in the world. I allowed my youngest son to become a police officer. And we do this great and important job, and every other week we get paid to do it. This is a great thing. Our morale should naturally be high. Here, moreover, the people of our county entrusted us with awesome power. They have so much confidence in us. They entrust us with the most awesome power a free society will ever entrust in another. And that is the right and the authority to take somebody's liberty on your oath. That is an awesome responsibility. So we not only have the greatest job in the world, the funnest job in the world, but we have awesome authority.
All right.
What a great thing.
All right. Sheriff, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Bill. You're a good friend, and thanks for having me on today.
All right. Dan, we'll be back with Dan Scheer talk for a few minutes before we have Weekend Watch. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Ever dream of taking a river cruise? Bon Voyage Travel introduces you to Ama Waterways. You'll explore authentic culture in captivating landscapes in luxury and comfort. All on board an award-winning fleet while you travel through incredible cities and villages in Europe, Southeast Asia, and Africa. Picture yourself on the river, indulging in Ama Waterways' locally inspired cuisine paired with complimentary wine with every lunch and dinner. Contact Bon Voyage Travel today to customize your river cruise vacation.
It's the Buckmaster Show, our Friday show on 10:30, Tucson's trusted source for news talk. Dan Scheer is here, editor of the Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun. Both those papers are part of the WIC newspaper chain, and Dan is the editorial director for a couple of dozen of the WIC newspapers in the western United States. Are they sharing a lot of the same issues, these small town papers, Dan?
Oh, absolutely they are. And let me break some news that was just broken a couple of hours ago by Google. Every year, Google has what they call a Google News Initiative. And we applied for one, and WIC Communications did, and we received it.
Wow.
And so,
congratulations.
It's a big deal. It's a lot of money, and we will roll out what we're going to do with it here over the next few months. But in essence, it's going to help people get better and much, much more local news. So this was, again, just announced a couple hours ago. It's an initiative that we were working on all summer, a very small group in WIC Communications, and we joined some elite company in getting the nod from Google.
Local is the survival path, Dan,
that's exactly
as you well
right.
know. 55 years coming up for the White Elephant?
55 years and millions of dollars. So the White Elephant is a thrift store in Green Valley. It's run by about 500 volunteers and one executive director. And this tomorrow at 10 a.m. is the 55th annual White Elephant Parade. More important than that, in December, they will give out about $1.7, $1.8 million in grants to various organizations, about 100 of them in this area. That's all the money that came in to the thrift store throughout the year. So over 55 years, you can imagine they have given away millions and millions of dollars. And it is an incredible group, and the White Elephant is going to be one of the best thrift stores you'll ever walk into.
How did that all get going?
You know, it got it going back in the 60s by some women who wanted to do a garage sale to support a local group. And then it just grew from there and became a little bit more formalized at some point. They put up a new building about 10 years ago, paid cash for it. And 100,000 of that every year goes directly to scholarships, college scholarships. And so, again, just since I've been here, this will be my 11th time, I guess, watching this unfold. It's you know, upwards of $20, $25 million. So they give a lot of money away.
Green Valley people, of course, want good roads, like all of us in Pima County, and I'm sure they're looking ahead to how they will be included, or will they be included, as the RTA moves forward with their next plan after the 20-year program expires in 2026.
Well, there's a conversation started by Supervisor Steve Christian. What he's saying is that, look, a lot of my district is unincorporated, Green Valley being the largest place in Pima County that has a population of unincorporated residents. And so he wants them to have the same spot at the table with the RTA when they decide what future projects they'll work on as the incorporated areas. And so he has started this discussion with Farhad Mogimi, who heads RTA, who's on this show quite a bit. A real knowledgeable guy, used to be in Sarita. And he says, we want them to have the same voice. And so there's a little back and forth going on that Green Valley wants to make sure it's heard as a community. Now, Farhad says, well, everyone can be heard as an individual, and we only look at the cities as individuals when someone speaks for them. Also, I get that, but when you speak as a community, and we have the Green Valley Council down there, we want to speak with that very loud voice that says we want to make sure that we are heard when it comes to future road projects, because we have as many problems as everybody else does in Pima County, and feel like we're being pushed aside.
And Green Valley, that whole idea of incorporation has come up, I don't know how many times over the years. But I wonder, are they then missing out on benefits by not incorporating? What are the advantages and what are the disadvantages?
Well, you did a good job a few years ago of covering the Vail incorporation effort and having quite a few people on this show. And there are lots of pros and cons to it. The incorporation vote has gone up in Green Valley four times, gone down in flames every single time.
Wow.
Massively. And the last time was almost 20 years ago. I will tell you now, there are more and more, I'm hearing whispers of people saying, yeah, we need to do it. But it takes a lot of energy to get a city or a town going, and I don't know that it is there. But will the new generation of retirees say, yeah, we want to be you know, the captains of our own ship and be the first layer of government, be really local like Sarita has or Tucson has, not have it to be Pima County? So it's a really big question, Bill. It's an important one. And in my 11 years there, I'm hearing it more now, more than ever, but it's still very, very quiet.
And I'm sure this is something that you cover, how the new generation of retirees,
absolutely,
you use that term.
Yes.
My generation, the baby boom generation, how are they looking at retirement differently than the previous generation? We could probably do a whole hour on that, and you've only got a few seconds.
I would say look at volunteering. Yeah. They don't want to volunteer as much, but they do they want to do short-term projects. They don't want to be roped into something that takes years. Mm-hmm. They want to have plenty of time to play, and a lot of them are deciding whether they want to live in a community that doesn't have children.
Interesting. And it's also baby boomers and the activist generation.
Absolutely.
How that's going to change some of these retirement,
absolutely,
communities is something that's fascinating, and that you and your colleagues cover there in Green Valley. Dan Scheer, thank you very much for all you do for this program, and specifically last Monday. You had a great show. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
All right. Weekend Watch with Visit Tucson's Dan Gibson in for the cruising Matt Russell. I've been seeing some of his Facebook posts. He's having a great time over in Greece, and he's on the cruise. We'll be right back.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com. or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Time to kick off the weekend with Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Only about a three-hour drive to a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment and a beautiful area of southwestern United States. Great time of year over there in the high country. That 5,000 to 7,000 foot elevation makes for beautiful days and cool nights. Check it out, southwestnewmexico.org, with all the tips on things to do and some great suggestions on accommodations in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Here he is, Dan Gibson of Visit Tucson, in for the cruising Matt Russell, having the time of his life. I've been following him on Facebook. Some of those seems like they can't drink enough wine over there in Greece right now. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing all right. I'm not drinking wine in Greece, but there otherwise you go. I'm still doing just fine.
Give us a few tips for the great weekend.
Absolutely. Well, you know, on Sunday, I will be, if people are looking for me, unless you're a process server or something, then I will not be there. I'll be at Ciclovia, the twice annual bike walk outdoor experience hosted by Living Streets Alliance. That's October 27th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. It is all up and down 12th Avenue. There is a variety of food and music and beer gardens, and we'll be handing out some pretty cool stickers. So, yeah, it's an incredible event. And if people haven't done Ciclovia before, it's just a really great opportunity to sort of see the streets in a different way, to see public streets in a way that is more bike and pedestrian friendly. So it's a heck of a good time. Highly recommend it on Sunday.
There is a lot of information at buckmastershow.com from your show that you did very nicely on various aspects of the cycling community. You did that show for me on Wednesday. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. Absolutely. Not related to bikes whatsoever. Also on Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m., Maynard's Marketing Kitchen is having their annual Grapes to Glass event. It's their fifth annual. It's a local wine festival. You can explore and taste wines from eight different Southern Arizona wineries. They'll each be pouring a red and white wine from their portfolio, and there's special discounts on things that you particularly like. Sand Reckoner, Sonoyta, Sandor Vineyard, Flying Leap, all the really great Southern Arizona wineries will be there. It is a heck of a good time, and you can also enjoy the Maynard's Happy Hour menu at the same time. So a full afternoon of events there at Maynard's, which will be a great time by all means.
I can take one more.
Well, you know what? I think something really fun happening is not necessarily on the same beat, but the Treasure House Estate Sale promoting the Tucson Museum of Art and Historic Block is Saturday and Sunday. Tonight, if you're a member of the museum as well. It is this huge estate sale, but it's thousands of square feet of antiques, fine art, furniture, fine china, jewelry, collectibles, all things. And it all benefits Tucson Museum of Art. You can go on to the Tucson Museum of Art's Facebook page and get a preview of some of the items, but there's some incredible stuff there. And it goes to a great cause. It's at 3401 East Fort Lowell Road. And if you are a member of the museum, the Friday night preview means you get to get some of the things before everybody else.
All right, Dan, lots to do, never a shortage of things to do on the weekend.
No, for certain. There's like 10 more I could have said by now.
There you go. Dan, have a great weekend. Thank you very
you
much.
Too.
Dan Gibson from Visit Tucson with our Weekend Watch segment. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. A couple of folks I'd like to thank. One of them, our original theme music that you hear at the beginning and at the end of our program, was composed for us by Christophan, a fine young Munich, Germany composer. Thanks to Rosemary Brandt, my assistant, making sure all of the podcasts are up at buckmastershow.com. John Couch, my friend, engineer and producer. Thank you, John, as usual. Doing a great job for the program. On behalf of everybody here at Bustos Media in Tucson, have a great weekend.